Hello, everyone. We are doing the Q&A for SBSM 18.0. This is Q&A number five, I believe. And I'm Rebecca Roman. If you're not familiar with me, I'm one of the moderators. And I'm just gonna shift that. You guys can hear me okay? It seemed like earlier was good. Okay, cool. And we have Leah in the chat, and Susan is here too from Team Line. So they will direct that. And I think I'll be able to get through all the questions. If not, then there will be a response emailed. And just as a reminder, as always, feeling yourself here, doing what you need to do to take care of yourself as you take in this information, connecting to what's around you, connecting to yourself, all that stuff that you guys have been learning. All right, so I'm going to start with this first question. I didn't theme them, I'm just gonna go through them. That seemed to be suitable to do that. So, I've been listening to a lot of distance energy healing recordings recently. It's sometimes the only thing that gets me to fall asleep, and it's so relaxing. I also took a course on it where they said that the nervous system unbalance can fix itself through the healing sessions. I'm just worried that the repeated relaxation of the nervous system and body would actually trap the sympathetic energy even more into my body when the point is to release it. Any thoughts on this? And this is a two-part question, actually. So I'm just going to go ahead and read the second part of this question and then I'll address it all. This year, I've started to feel much more alive as exiting freeze, although life is already so much better. This autumn, I've been feeling more tired than ever. Nothing excites me and just feels exhausting, including daily tasks. I'm more irritated. I even moved cities, but I got no interest in my new studies, exploring, or making new friends. I've processed many feelings this year and started now with SBSM. Are these depression-like symptoms normal while healing, or should I be worried about my mental health? In the first part of this question, in reference to the relaxation of the energy distance healing, it is helpful and that could be a resource that can be supportive, right? To, as you mentioned, that it helps you to fall asleep. In this work, as we're creating more regulation, the overarching idea is that we can get more access to the ventral vagal system, the social engagement system that is responsible for that downregulation, for us being able to chill, to engage, to not just be in that state of stress physiology, as well as the low tone parasympathetic, which is more about, sleeping, more relaxation, digesting food. So sometimes the way the system with dysregulation, it will interpret, the sympathetic charge or stimulus and create more of a stress response. And the other end of that is with relaxing and getting, there can just be that you go into high tone, and that's where the freeze comes on. So what might be useful here is when doing those practices of the energy healing is maybe play with staying more alert. Play, at least in the beginning. I know you said you like to do this as you fall asleep and bring in the foundations that you've been learning in SBSM with orienting, connecting to resources, connecting to yourself, so that you're not just going maybe into that freeze state, because that could be happening. Because under that freeze is the sympathetic, as you're concerned about, will it just trap it? Eventually, we want to get to what's under the freeze and mobilize it, as the sympathetic is the system of mobilization. A way to maybe gauge if you're going more into freeze when doing this practice with the energy healing is if you feel start to feel kind of spacey or numb, distracted, different than that yummy, restful state. And this can also happen when doing the neurosensory practices in SPSM. That's just part of figuring this out. And if you can start to feel what might be under the freeze and mobilize that. If you're not already, in due time, as you feel to have the capacity to do that. So, with that second part of your question, you're saying that you've started to exit freeze, right? And that you're feeling much better and life is much better. But then there's this depression, which is freeze, basically. That's that physiological state of freeze. So then you're noticing that there's irritation. In a way, that's a good sign that you're noticing that. So I would encourage you to work with, during the day, when you notice the irritation, is to work with it. Tune in, listen, what does it feel like? Where is it in your body? What might it look like? What might it need to do, or how might it need to express? And work with those feelings because this, when doing, because you're mentioning that you've just started SPSM, but it sounds like you've been doing some other work, other practices, and process many feelings, as you said in the second part of the question. Sometimes processing feelings, it's not that you weren't processing feelings, but we might be doing that more intellectually than doing it in the body. And so feelings, emotions are energy in motion. Emotions are a collection of sensations. So to see about feeling into them as far as where they are in your body, and those feelings and emotions are, they're there for a reason. They get us what we need. They are about mobilization. It's just oftentimes for a variety of reasons due to early developmental trauma, just due to how kind of society and life is, we don't always mobilize them. We don't always express them. And so that might be useful to kind of notice, is this something you've been doing more intellectually? And there's just stuff in the system. So now there's like this depression, this break coming on that you're feeling. As well as this work is layered. You can go through layers, like there's a change, you have more capacity. Now there's more that resurfaces, more in that freeze. But the idea is to develop more of that relationship between these states versus that tendency for the wiring that there's some stimulus or there's a sympathetic charge and then the freeze comes on. Trying not to say looking at my notes. Shame is also part of depression, working with shame. The trapped anger, the trapped fear that's in, towards ourself. So that might be something to start to work with eventually. And in lab six, there's going to be more practices that can help support this and healthy aggression. And as a resource, there's a video, on Irene's YouTube, how suppressing our emotions and physiology can lead to depression. That might be helpful to check that out. And with freeze, just even inciting some mobilization. So like Elia's movement lessons are really great for that, not only for that, but can really help just to create some movement because I hear that you're not feeling real inspired. You're not feeling like you want to go out and do things that are interested. And I also want to name that it's okay if you're not feeling real great about things, but can there just be like some okayness? Can you just recognize like orienting or a resource? This is here. I feel my feet underneath me. Like I feel like this resource I have right now are these new slippers that I got, I'm not like ecstatic about them. That's okay. But I can sense them. I can feel them. They help me just, well, they help the temperature of my feet, which feels good. But just to, there's just some okayness. So doing something like Ilya's movement lesson might be just a way to get some movement mobilized and spark the system, as well as not just movement, but even the social engagement system. Yeah. So that's what I have for that. All right, so the next question. Recently, I felt healthy aggression starting to bubble up. My body almost starts to form positions that I used to form when playing rugby from ages 10 to 20. I had stopped playing rugby 7 years ago because of multiple concussions, but it feels like my body still wants to process anger by playing rugby. Do you have any suggestions on how to work with these shapes and the strong desire to play a sport that's not safe for me to play? That comes with these shapes. So, first, yes, playing a sport, especially like rugby, can be a very potent way to move sympathetic energy, to move anger. It's not the only way, of course. And I hear that you're missing it or wanting it. So, one of the things about when we're doing an activity, like especially an organized activity like a sport, right? There's an agenda there. There's a, there's rules. There's which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. There's the camaraderie and the negotiating with team members. There's what you're supposed to be doing. So sometimes, even though that is definitely sympathetic energy to do that, we might not actually be able to be in touch with as much as we would be when we are can slow it down, be with ourselves or less people, and really feel the nuances of what's going on in our system. Because there could even be emotion that comes up, for instance. There could be different sensations, different procedural memories that want to come through. And that doesn't always happen when it's in that form of the activity. So I just want to name that. You can work with the shapes by being with them. And it sounds like you have been. And I would say to support you in continuing to do that, because this could also have something to do with the concussions and some of the procedural memories, sorry, my throat's a little scratchy. Procedural memories coming through from those concussions. So, as those shapes come up, if you can follow them, slow them down, you might even pendulate by going in and out of them. So, I'm not really sure what the shapes are. But let's say it was, contracting. Rounding your back, coming out of a little bit, tracking what's happening in the system as you do that. And noticing the different sensations, but also if there's images that come up, a behavior, which might be a certain movement that's inspired from that shape, emotions. And any meaning that comes up. And this is part of CBAM. Seth has mentioned CBAM several times over the course of different Q&As. I don't know if he has yet, though, yet. But CBAM, it's SIBAM. Peter Levine created this, just a kind of more of a congruent way to look at these integral parts of ourselves and our experience and bringing them together. So, sensation, image, behavior, affect, so that emotion. And meaning, the meaning we might make of things. And if that aggression shows up, right, it's like, how does that aggression want to move? And again, there could be some of that aggression in regards specifically to the concussion that have to do with the protection, right, of, wanting to get, fight back or wanting to get out of the way. And then the other part is a question about other ways to work with healthy aggression or with sound. with squeezing, squeezing a ball, squeezing a towel, pushing, you could push your hands into a surface, it could be a wall, pushing your feet into the floor, lifting weights, jumping, imagining the aggression if it's towards something or someone, starting to work with that in your image. And what if there's anything here around this not playing anymore, how you feel about not playing anymore, and touching into that. What does that feel like? What has that been meaning to you that you're not playing rugby anymore? And it might be useful to watch rugby. What do you notice in your body as you watch it? Whether you watch it on a screen, whether you watch it in real time, or if there's a rugby video game, I don't know if that exists. That could be a way to sort of fulfill that. I know for me, I dabbled some years ago in judo. I find judo fascinating. Judo's pretty intense. And when I did it, I was like, wow. And I was even injured. But anyway, I didn't continue with it, but I loved going to meets. I loved going and watching competitions. And that was fulfilling enough for me because I wasn't going to continue to do it anymore. And finding another activity. I hear pickleball is really hot right now. I don't know, tennis, like all, any other sport that might be interesting to you that is safer and more, just more feasible for you to do right now. But overall, you can definitely move healthy aggression and anger without necessarily playing rugby. Okay, so next question. When you say tracking your sensations or tracking your breath, does that just mean to feel your sensations or breath, or does track referring to some, or does track referring to something more specific? This is another two-part question. So then the second part of the question, we've been discussing different types of trauma and the sequence of healing. I know we want to trust the body's wisdom to bring things up in the right order, and that generally things occur backwards in time, from chronic stress to shock trauma to early developmental trauma. We also want to prioritize a foundation of safety before going into deeper trauma processing. My question, how do we build a foundation of safety if early developmental trauma is the last trauma to heal, but also the root cause of our inability to feel safe? So the first part of the question revolving tracking. So tracking means to feel and sense the sensations, so to feel and sense what's happening inside. And that could be your breath. It's about watching it though, similar to if you were to look out and watch birds that were moving, you're kind of watching and tracking their path. Like you're not controlling them. You're not telling them where to go, and you're watching. Maybe they're in this part of the sky and then this part, and then maybe they do this configuration, like a group of them, and then maybe they stop. When you listen to music, you're not controlling the music. You're just listening. There could be different ways to listen. I mean, it could be just in the background, or you can hone in, but watching, feelings, hearing the shift in the melodies. So the shift sometimes of our sensations. Sometimes it might be like the sensation doesn't really shift. It's just there and you're listening. Well, we call it tracking because it's a way of watching, and usually eventually, there is some sort of shift or how it might move or change in the system. Like a vibration, for example, it might be somewhere and then it moves somewhere else, or the quality of the vibration changes. It might become stronger, it might become less strong. Breathing patterns may change. A lot of us have been very conditioned when we tune into our breathing to try to breathe a certain way. There's a time and a place for breathing, a breathing practice or exercise, but versus just feeling our breath. So what I love in SBSM is the practices on the inhale and exhale, which is just this invitation, right, to just feel and notice what's happening with your breathing. And this can help us learn to be with and observe, because this is really a foundation of this work and overall nervous system regulation, without needing it to be a certain way. And it's understandable sometimes when things are unpleasant that we don't want it, like a symptom or a sensation, we don't want it. And that means something's wrong, right? And so with that, there's this like agenda, and then that's more of a state of fear. That's just activating more of that sympathetic arousal versus, can I be with and notice? And this is how we build that capacity, right? So we can be with, there can be this expansion within us, so we can meet that pressure and mobilize and be with what's happening, as well as there can be different responses, because a sensation is a sensation versus, oh, this sensation means this. And then we go into the story that the sensation means this, which we can be unconscious to that at times. And then that sets the loop, and now we're more activated. So tracking is really important. It's a big part of this work. And also, that can happen in the environment. We're just tracking and noticing, right? And as you guys have learned, there's different forms of orienting. What's happening out there? What do I notice? Which engages the ventral vagal system. It's our social engagement system. Okay. All right, so the second part of the question in regards to this whole like process of renegotiating trauma, it doesn't necessarily have to be in that order. It doesn't necessarily have to be that you work with this stress and then this shock and then EDT. They're kind of like all interchangeable. The most important thing as you're gathering, and why the first couple labs are the way they are as far as SPSM goes, is developing some kind of coherent stability, okayness in the system, so we can get back to that, so that we can land, so that we can be with what I was saying previously, with bigger sensations, with some of these trapped stress responses. And it might be founded in the early developmental trauma, right? Because if we didn't get what we needed, or things happened that shouldn't have, and our system became more wired to be in these survival states, that could be why something later that might be like stress, just stress of life, or chronic stress, or it becomes chronic stress, or a shock trauma that has everything to do with how our system developed. But they all work together, and it's about what presents. It's what shows up. It's not that we have to hone in on just one first. As we get into deeper work, we can get into deeper work, whether it's about a shock or whether it's about early developmental, as there's more capacity, which again is why the foundations are so important. So it doesn't have to really, it's not linear. It doesn't really have to be in that way. Early developmental trauma is definitely relational. And so that, as we get into that more, there is something about that relationship with other and relationship with self. But it's not like that's absent if we're focusing on a shock trauma. And as there's more freedom and ease available in the system, this is going to give us, again, that access to the ventral and the low tone physiology, which low tone dorsal physiology, which is what we want for that, for more regulation and be able to work with these stored charges in the system. For example, if I were working with someone and they had these specifics, but yet when they were showing up, they were having a hard time maybe being with me, being with tuning to my ventral vagal, right? And then that's what we're going to work with. We're not going to go, okay, well, we're going to hone in on that one shock thing you had and process it. We're just going to work with this because that's what presents. So they're kind of all working on it all at the same time. And it just kind of happens the more capacity that you build. Okay, I'm just checking that one more time. Okay. I'm gonna have a little sip of water. You guys want to have a little sip of something? Looking at the time. Okay, so the next question. Would you consider an electronic device which stimulates alpha brainwaves to treat anxiety to be a kind of biohacking? Do you think it could be effective alongside SPSM? If you find that it's supportive to you alongside SPSM, definitely. I don't know a ton about these devices, but a bit, and I have a little bit of experience with them. But it's, yes, it elicits a relaxation response. So it can be helpful in, downregulating the system. Could be like a resource. But similar to what I mentioned with the energy distance healing, when we get relaxed, we just want to, tune in. Am I relaxed? Going to be present to this relaxation, or am I going more into freeze? So that could be something important to look at if you use the device. And therefore, I would encourage bringing in these foundations that you're learning in SPSM when you use the device. So orienting, having a resource, following your impulse, feeling what you're touching. And noticing, because there also could be activation that shows up. So I know with clients that have reported this to me, and I've experienced it when I've done things like that. Like I have a TENS machine that I've played with that does something, I guess, to the vagus nerve, even though the vagus nerve is part of everything. I have noticed sometimes when doing it, even though the idea is, oh, it's supposed to relax you, that I've felt activation. Now, since I'm trained and experienced, I knew how to work with it. And then that was how I guided clients that were doing things like that. I know sometimes I like yoga nidras at night, or I've explored with Joe Dispenza's meditations. And I know, and I've t noticed when I've started to go, there's just this impulse, like I need to stop, or I'm just starting to get spacey, or there's this feeling, this activation, I pause it and I work with it. Whereas if I overrode it, which I did plenty of that over the years with things I've done, not so good. So this is all about experimentation. It's not like through this work we're saying, oh, this is the only thing to do. But I would say that it definitely to do something like that in conjunction with this and use it as a resource. Yeah. It's like, can you be like, can you really experience, okay, I feel relaxed. I feel my system come down. Because again, when we're not used to that, that can be alarming. That can be like, I don't, it can be alarming, or it's just like we could just go into high tone dorsal, we go into some kind of freeze or shutdown, and it's, so we want to be able to integrate, like, oh yeah, that's why we say so often in a lot of our responses, and we use that word of just some okayness. Can I be okay? Can I? And that might become enjoying something, because oftentimes with other modalities or biohacks, whatnot, and yeah, it could be considered a biohack, I guess. There's like this jump to go from, okay, I'm stressed, and now I'm gonna relax, right? That can happen in meditations or yoga classes. It's like somebody's running all day and going through their day and running in survival energy, and then they get to yoga class and now relax. And before I understood this, I taught yoga for years. I was a yoga teacher for years, and that student would be there, and I would be like, what's up with them? I have this amazing way that I'm starting the class, and it's very calm, and this whole guided, like Feldenkrais thing. And this person's just like, they can't just relax because their system can't just jump to that. So again, what we're doing in this work is creating more of a reciprocal relationship and flow in these states. But if we don't have that access to the ventral vagal, which often does have to do with early developmental trauma, we need to get access to that. We need to grow that, as well as that low tone dorsal, to really be able to settle. So sometimes with some of these interventions, that can happen, and we don't. So I just say it's not just throw out the intervention, but incorporate these foundations with it for sure. I'd say the same thing about massage, body work, meditation, herbs. I mean, there's so many things nowadays that are bringing that on in some way, calming, relaxation. Okay, next question. I'm a first round. Where did it go? I'm a first round alumni, and realized that my system was so constricted due to EDT and shock trauma that I felt only pain or nothing pleasant feelings were always connected with pleasing somebody else. How to release this great sympathetic energy that lies beneath this constriction? Excuse me, it shows as pain in muscles, belly cramps, headaches. I try to connect with it to accomplish procedural memory, do healthy aggression, but I wonder if I'm cycling or completing the process. So first off, I want to say, and this might be redundant, it can take time. I believe that Irene just did, I think it was on IG, on Instagram. She talked about this taking time. She talked about a lot of the fancy things, whatever things out there professing, it can just happen real quick. At the same time, I'm not suggesting that there aren't instant changes. And I'm also not suggesting that there aren't miracles. I definitely believe in miracles, and I believe in some supernatural stuff too that can occur. But in growing more regulation, it takes time. And I would suggest that I want to say first, it's okay that it can be hard, and it's normal to feel pleasant feelings. And so, again, as I had mentioned earlier, can you just notice them maybe and name them, even if it's not real amazing? Like, it could be something outside of you as you're orienting, like a color. It could be a place in your body where you feel neutral or okay. And just really listen to that versus only focusing on where there is pain and constriction. Because it can be a big leap to go from being in survival physiology, being in freeze, to feeling pleasant and feeling good. And that's why we are doing these practical foundations of a resource. And it's just like, it's just okay. I just like the color, and I feel like there's a little ease inside of me. It's not real profound. Doesn't mean it's going to make the constriction of the pain go away, but create some differentiation and allow us to be able to be with it versus maybe the reaction of it. And that reaction to, like, what I'm hearing in your question, I totally get it. Like, I'm doing this to try to get it to complete. You know, Seth, he talked about this a bit early on in the Q&A that him and Jen did on EDT. It was one of the first questions, I believe, but of this agenda to want it to go away. Especially, it's like, oh, there's cramps, there's a headache, there's pain, there's constriction. How can we meet it? How can we practice meeting? How can you practice meeting the sensation? It might be a hand on you. It might be something from the outside that supports you to be with these sensations and listen to them and see how they can play out rather than trying to make it move or get rid of it, right? It's like, I just got to get rid of this sympathetic energy. And how those procedural memories might come up. And they might be subtle. And even if they didn't seem like they came up, it doesn't mean that nothing happened as you were doing the inquiry and listened. It's like that inquiry, that curiosity versus the agenda. And you know, with early developmental trauma, as you mentioned here, the mobilization can be something more small, like especially if from being in utero and a baby, like movements of your spine, movements of your hands. So they won't necessarily be big expressions, big cathartic movements, nor should they be. And again, we want to like be able to touch into that and come back out. What else was I going to say there? You know, I mean, the healthy aggression work, yeah, and it's not like, oh, we just do healthy aggression once and then that's it. And it's a process of how that might unfold. And there can be other stuff in there, right? Other emotions, other sensations, even though the focus might be healthy aggression. The lab six, you did say you're alum, the lab six practices might be really supportive right now. Especially the pain and pleasant, shifting attention from pain to pleasant, noticing those differences. So, again, just listening versus changing. And if we even consider early developmental trauma, what if we got what we needed? Like, what if the attunement of, oh, like, you know, it's like, you have this expression, you could be a baby, you could be a toddler, a kid, and the caretaker is like, oh, I'm here with you. And oh, wow, it's, let's say your body's doing something. This is so amazing what your body's doing. And there's a healing, and like you scrape your knee or something. Look at like the cells and stuff, and your body's healing. And I'm with you. And but often, and I'm not trying to diss our caretakers, it's just what they know and their own systems. There's their own stress with it. Like, something's wrong. And I just want you to stop crying and walk it off. Or, you know, we'll just put this on it, or we'll go to the doctor. Or, you know, it. What if there wasn't that agenda, that stressful agenda, the way that I first described? So that's how we need to meet ourselves. But if we go into all this healing, it could be this healing, it could be other healing. And I've done lots of things. And I'm saying this from experience too. With this agenda, I gotta fix this. That's stress. It's not listening. And you've maybe felt that relationally as an adult. It's like a friend or a family member or your spouse is like, bro, you gotta reel it in. Like, why are you being like that? Like, you've gotta calm down, you know? And making it, we've got to fix this. That's stress. That's not meeting it. That doesn't mean there might not be things you do. Like we learn to regulate. We learn, okay, I'm here. I'm okay. Come down a little bit. I'm learning how to not overreact. But we've got to meet us where we are. And especially when there's, and I know it's not pleasant when there's symptoms, because the symptoms are this trapped survival energy that is not going to mobilize very well if we can't meet ourselves where we're at with that quality of inquiry and compassion, which also is part of this and takes some time to grow that. And it might be easier to practice doing that with something outside of ourselves before it's us, like a pet, like a tree, like a flower. You know, just appreciating, meeting, loving, watching, not controlling. There's a different feel with that, a whole different physiology with that. Okay. Next question, and then we'll take a little pause. I have anger and disgust emotions around my boyfriend's mom. It stems from my jealousy over women. Was bullied a lot. She complains a lot, even though she says she's very happy. That triggers me. She reminds me of my younger self. She has some comments about our life choices. She's not toxic. It just has been more about competition, who has a better life than a connection. How can I work with this? I'm a woman. My boyfriend knows all about this, and he's fully supportive. Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's great that he's supportive and he understands and that you can share this with him. So I'd say overall, keep doing the work. Keep doing the work to build capacity and to be able to work with some of this deeper stuff, right? To digest some of this anger that's coming up as you're being triggered. That could very much have something to do with what you mentioned about jealousy over women and being bullied. So it may be helpful as you feel ready. Not sure if you're a lover or not, but to work with the healthy aggression, the experience of being bullied. If you can kind of go into what happened, track what's happening in your body. It might just be a little bit, then come back out. And that's mobilizing that survival energy and frees up the system. So then we become over time less triggered. It doesn't mean we have to like everything, but just less triggered, because it sounds like, yeah, you're triggered by what your boyfriend's mom is saying, and it's bringing up stuff for you. You also mentioned that it reminds you of your younger self. So being curious about that, what are you reminded of? Are you reminded of being competitive, jealous? If you can again inquire and attune to that part of yourself, what you notice in your body as you attune to that younger part of yourself with compassion. And there may be some emotions, there may be some memories of that time. And, again, it's like, can I embrace that younger part of myself and understand that younger part of myself and where they were coming from, why they did what they did? So even, having this knowledge, this education of our nervous system and our wiring can help elicit that compassion. It's like understanding. It's like, oh yeah, you did the best you could do when you were younger and you were in survival energy or whatever and responded this way and got competitive and jealous and all that, which is just part of that survival energy. When you're with her, definitely be doing this when not with her. Again, growing your capacity, working with foundations of orienting, resourcing, following impulse. And when you're with her, see if you can really do that. Like, have a resource with you, have a little token in your pocket or something with you that's resourceful. Orient, slow down. And then you can just kind of notice, what's coming up, if anything, if she says something. And that can give you a little more opportunity to respond a little differently than maybe react from, in the habitual way. If there needs to be boundaries, right? Like if you need to set boundaries with her about how you're doing your life, as you mentioned her comments about your life choices, if you need to have some boundaries around what you talk about or how she is with you to explore with them, and what might be a way to connect with that more somatically is the potent posture practice. Where do you feel that sense of, you can do it sitting, standing. You can even be playing with potent posture when you're with people. Where do you feel that sense of potency and agency? So a way to work with it somatically and then behaviorally as far as what you might say and what kind of boundaries, if any, you lay out. But overall, can you, over time, the idea here is can you feel comfortable in yourself that it doesn't matter if she's being competitive or saying what she thinks about what you do because you're okay with it? Because this needing other people, this is where we get into early developmental trauma patterns, like needing other people to approve of us or needing other people to agree with us, needing other people to be a certain way for us to feel okay. I mean, initially, physiologically, biologically, we needed that to a degree as we develop, but as we mature, we're still relating to people and have relationships, but that it's not about needing them to be a certain way for us to be okay. That we can be okay. That doesn't mean we have to hang out with everybody. But that we can be okay regardless, even if she has a different opinion about how you live. So in doing the work, that's just going to help with it. Oh, and this one part, like who are you angry, who are you angry with besides her? What were you believing? What were you told? What are you believing about yourself, or that might have to do with some of that jealousy, that might have to do with feeling not good enough? And I know you haven't said it in this question that early developmental trauma is in the picture, but I'm assuming there is to a degree here. Okay. Let's take a little pause. For like 2 minutes or so, you could use the restroom, grab a beverage, whatever you want to do, and then we will come back. Okay. I was just looking at the chat. It was just this last question. Not need others to be a certain way, but need them around. Is that what is it what she meant? Well, we might need people to be around because we might need and we might yeah, we need each other. We need people. But needing them to be a certain way so that we feel okay is something else, you know? So if I need somebody to agree with me, for me to feel safe, for me to feel valid, valuable, and I might feel like, you know, threatened if they don't agree with me, right? And so again, that physiology, it's like, oh, someone doesn't agree with me, or someone said this, and now I'm triggered. Versus, oh, they just don't agree with me, and I can even connect with them in other ways. I'm still okay. I'm inherently okay. But when we're little, we need in different ways, and that's where we learn about what we can trust. That's where we learn about connection. That's where we develop that just inherent goodness and okayness when we get the right attunement and get what we need. But also, needs aren't always going to be met. But again, that comes to it's just somebody might not be doing what you want them to do. Now, if it's extreme and you need to separate from that person, then that's your discernment and that's honoring yourself. But it's that you don't make it about you. Like it means I'm bad, it means I'm wrong. And that's where we can kind of get into meanings that are in the unconscious. But you know, really are coming from that physiological reaction. So, yeah, accept someone. Maybe they're in your life, maybe they're in-laws, you know? Accept people. We certainly need that in the world right now. Instead of so much like, well, no, you think this and you think that, and that means you're this. It doesn't necessarily mean that. But if we, you know, if it's like, nope, survival energy, threat, you're a threat because you don't agree with me. You're a threat because you didn't do what I want. You're a threat because you looked at me weird. You know, my husband doesn't love me because he wouldn't rub my feet. You know, it's like, doesn't really mean that. But again, when with the, if the underlying physiology is in these survival states, that impacts our perception, that impacts how we see the world. And how we interact with the world. That's why we work with that foundationally. Okay, so the next question. Hello, currently trying to feel newbie, so new to the work, mostly in fight, flight, freeze, overwhelmed, tachycardia, tight muscles, and breathing challenges. Is there a way to stay with feeling to do this work without overwhelm? To become less numb and avoid going into freeze so quickly. A friend suggested using something rough to help myself stay in my body. Is that okay? Any recommendations, please? Thank you. So, once again, super important building capacity, working with the foundations, finding some okayness in your system and landing in that. So, we're shifting out of. And interrupting in a way, just the freeze coming in. You know, it's like something happens, or there's sensations you mentioned, feeling, you know, overwhelmed, the tight muscles, and then I'm just going into freeze. Can there be a little bit of that okayness? So, again, working with those foundations big time, orienting, resourcing, following impulse. Also, because you're talking about, you know, staying in your body, like it's also okay. And part of it, part of this whole process and learning of coming out of your body. And that's because what's happening here, our field is all part of our body. Gravity, oxygen, light, food, other people. temperature, what we're touching, what we might be doing. That's all part of our embodiment. Versus, and that's those in the field are the cues of we're here now. We're here now. We're okay. There might be stuff going on inside. We might have thoughts. There might even be something that happens out there that we don't like. But overall, this is all letting us know somatically, introspectively, that we are okay. And I know that that can seem, it's certainly not a sexy biohack, but it's so important. And that's why you hear us, whether it's written answers. We definitely are intending to be as specific as we can with y'all when we answer and we moderate and here in the Q&As, but we often repeat something along these lines because it's the foundation. And it's layered. I mean, I know for me, it's like, yeah, I'm orienting. When I started, yeah, sure, totally orienting. Cool. Yep. And then it just got like more like, oh, this is what it really means to connect and then really be in my body. And that embodiment can be something that we do often, that we can operate from embodiment, that we can operate from a felt sense versus too much in the head, for instance. So you can work with maybe some more nuanced ways of orienting, touching things. I love the extra resources in Lab One at the bottom there of Lab One that are just some more nuanced orienting guided practices that bring in other senses, that bring in different ranges of like how far away you look, how close. So that could be a way to support more of this embodiment. Touch, self-touch, touching us, touching parts of your body, listening, as I was talking about that inquiry, where you feel good, but yes, also if you're noticing, you said the tight muscles, the breathing challenges, oh, and I just be with my breath and feel like I am breathing. I do notice that I'm breathing. There's some okayness there versus not breathing. If you notice, okay, start, freeze, overwhelm, you can elicit some movement. But again, sparking that social engagement system is going to help come out of the freeze. But you can move. You can do little movements. You can see, I'm going to get up and have a walk. I'm going to squeeze something. Do one of Elia's movement lessons. Noticing too, really again, those impulses, your biological impulses. It's like, yeah, I'm hungry. And then when you eat, I really taste it. Can I really be present with this experience of eating and really taste and have. Be with the flavors and get acquainted with being embodied because there might be that that can be scary. And over time, eventually then being, moving some of that, even just a little bit at a time, dipping into that sympathetic energy. How does it want to move? How does it want to express? Coming back out, creating more of that reciprocal relationship between those states. You mentioned your friend saying something rough. I'm not totally sure what that means, but I'm thinking, my sense is it's like if you were to maybe, let's say you touch something rough, right? You're gonna feel. So, I mean, you can play with that, right? But I wouldn't do anything like aggressive necessarily to be with your body, but what might just be pleasant to you. And sometimes, if something is too stimulating to the system, that can just be more activation and then more freeze. So, I would encourage to work with what I initially said before doing something that's like forcing you to be within your body, right? Like something rough, something intense. That takes more skill. And sometimes one might think they're like, oh, I'm really being in my body, but they're actually going into freeze. Makes me think of cold plunge. It's not that cold plunges aren't helpful, but we need to have capacity for that. Okay. All right, next question. I have a confusion about trust. I'm confused about my confusion. It's like a concept I should know, but in reality, I struggle with it. It feels like I trust people that somehow rejected me, or where there is some kind of confusion if I can trust them more than the ones that prove me some kind of worthiness. I'm not sure if there's a mechanism of wanting to get the approval of others, to get the approval of the persons. How to some degree reject me or just do not have the capacity to handle me. Could you elaborate an EDT at the end, meaning you've got some early developmental trauma going on? So I've sort of speaking this a little bit and the other questions, as we develop, that's where we're learning about trust, right? Can I trust? Then that might not be cognitively what we're thinking as babies and little children, but like, can I trust these sensations? And then I express in some way, I make a noise, I do this or that, and my caretaker attunes to me and provides me with what I need and provides me with that interaction. And that's all, I can trust that. Versus, well, I just go up high and then shut down. And then it just kind of gets convoluted. Well, it's not safe to really feel that or express that. And I can't really trust, or if there's not stability, if there's not reliancy in it, it's like, oh, I don't know how to trust it. So again, doing this work is about building the rebuilding, reparenting ourselves and rebuilding that trust in ourselves. Really simply, like, I feel hungry. I feel like I gotta go to the bathroom. I feel tired. I feel like I wanna move. I notice what I see out there, and I can trust that. Relationally, there that's a little more nuanced because here we kind of get back to that earlier question. Trusting others is something that we build. And that shows up through the interactions with others, based on what they do, based on what happens with that person and what that kind of relationship is. But regardless of what they do, can we trust ourselves to discern and respond to it accurately? And that occurs with everything that I said before. When this attunement or this attachment's interrupted, that can show up later as I'm not sure what trusting. And if there was in your situation where it seemed like trusting was trusting people that rejected you, so that maybe there was something there with there was rejection, but because you want to keep your caretakers around or your family, you we don't just leave and fight. It's like we somehow pattern yourself and look that that's what you can trust is being rejected. And then the opposite of that is, well, then what do I do to get you to accept, to approve me and accept me? And that's the tango. But doing this work and repairing and healing these wounds is about trusting yourself. And giving yourself approval. And that if there is approval or agreeance, or it just happens. And it's just like, well, it's just there. It's just for the sake of it. And it's lovely with others rather than I need it in order for me to feel okay or to feel worthy or to feel like I can trust myself. Building trust with yourself. Not needing people to be a certain way. And again, If there was someone in your life that lied to you or didn't treat you well, that's again, it doesn't mean you have to continue to engage with them, but it's choosing and honoring yourself to move away from that, to create a boundary, to say no, to communicate, excuse me, what you need. What's okay with you? Then it's up to that other person of how they're going to respond to it, what they're willing to do or not do, or I'm sorry, you guys. I've had a little. A little congestion the last couple days. I'm sorry. I'm feeling really hot right now and embarrassed. But I'm gonna trust myself to pull it together and keep going. Woo! Okay. I'm looking at my notes again. Oh, the part you mentioned about feeling like too much. Like you can't trust people to handle you. It's just, again, just another variation of being yourself, right? Being authentic. I would say, too, this work definitely curates, helps grow us being our authentic selves. I actually saw something about, it was some kind of study. I don't know how they did it as a study, but they were able to kind of map or detect the most, like with frequencies or a scan or something. I don't know. The most highest vibration frequency of emotion. Something like that. One would think that it might be love, but it was authenticity. And so, as we're younger
Wow.
and we're being ourselves, and then that gets squashed somehow, right? Then it's like, oh, I'm too much. I can't be myself. So, again, in that part of your question, this practice of being me and being okay. And if it's not, if you're not ready to so practice it so much with other people, that's okay. And you practice it with yourself and you practice it with your environment and you practice it in your image. So, like if there's somebody specific that you want to trust and feel that safety with and be authentic, how can you imagine that and work with what comes up in your system as you imagine being that way with them? Okay, next one. Eighth round alum with EDT. I'm in my first romantic relationship since starting this work and coming out of freeze. I'm experiencing a whole new set of fears, which are pushing me beyond my comfort zone. How is this work different in relationship, and does it trigger new unresolved past relationship trauma? Can you offer any advice on how to work with this, please? So, yes, romantic relationships can definitely touch into our wounds, touch into stuff, bring up stuff. Irene and Seth just recently did on YouTube, Want Love to Last? Start Here. So, that might be something worth checking out. If your partner is open to, you sharing this work with them to a degree, that might be really supportive, even if it's just kind of letting them know the basics and sharing with them in some way. But as you build more of that, relationship with yourself, authenticity, this more regulation, more access, right, to your ventral vagal, your low tone dorsal, shifting out of these states of survival, that will overflow and reflect in your relationships, except or and. It can bring stuff up, and there might be some pieces to work with. So you specifically say unresolved past relationship trauma. So if there's something to work with there, like something that you recall, a piece of a past relationship that you want to work with, you can use what you're learning here in SBSM. As you said, your, eighth round, if there's some working with unprocessed emotions, the felt sense of them, of course, any healthy aggression. Because the wounds from the past will carry out into romantic relationships. It's also okay. Like, it doesn't mean like we need to be like perfect, right? And just so perfect and totally regulated to be in a romantic relationship. So again, but is the person you're with in some way, can you guys be open about this and work with it together? Maybe figuring out too, when you feel triggered, you need to pause so you're not just reacting and creating, arguments. Can you be, practice being honest and vulnerable with what may be coming up for you if things arise? And in this whole, feeling connected to ourselves and feeling okayness and some sense of safety, how can you do that with your partner? What's that like, when you being playful maybe, or just doing some like orienting together and connecting together and just noticing and letting that really settle in, because I'm assuming you're in a healthy relationship, you're in a relationship you want to be in, letting your system really receive that, that that's different than the past relationships, that that's also different now that you've done so much of this work and you've shifted in your physiology how you can relate from that place and really let that sink in. Because sometimes it can be like, I can't, it's almost like I can't accept it. I know this person loves me and they're great and they're safe, but I just feel like I can't really let it in because you've been used to more of the trauma bond, right? You mentioned it, touching into your comfort zone, absolutely. So again, what is it like for you to be comfortable and dip into like, well, what is happening that you feel there's out of your comfort zone? And how can you work with it? Which might be just doing that separately, but then also seeing how you can do that with your partner. I know for me, it's really being honest and open with my partner of what's happening for me and owning it, like, versus that this is my experience and I'm naming it. Like, we're learning to be with and name our experience versus maybe the reaction for a variety of reasons that we might criticize and say, when you did this, this made me feel, you know what I mean? It's like, this was my experience when this happened. And this is what I noticed. And I noticed this because, you know what? Growing up, my dad, blah, 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 you know? And it's not like your partner has to totally get all that or whatever, but that they're just, it's very different owning what your experience is and being accountable with it versus critiquing the other person, which can be really easy to do in romantic relationships. Okay, next question. I have EDT. This is my fourth round of SBSM. A lot has come up that I'm processing. One thing I'm not sure how to process is the constant feeling in my bones that not only will the worst happen with any and everything, but that my body's expecting it. I'm aware of it, but I don't know how to move it through and out. I had severe childhood sexual abuse by the person I thought was my father. I had to live in that household my entire childhood. So I first want to say, yes, this sounds right, like hypervigilance in the system. You're noticing it deep in your bones. So as you've been learning, and I'm sure you've been doing, right? I'm saying I'm aware of it, but I don't know how to move it through and out. Again, can we develop that? It might seem like a mentality at first, but an embodied way, an energetic way of attuning and being with your experience versus trying to move it out. And I know that's easier said than done because it's like, I don't want this here. And I want to heal, right? And orienting, continuing with orienting, of course, but see what it might be like to orient from your bones. You're saying you feel this feeling of expecting something the worst would happen. Can you tune into your bones and show your bones, like from the perspective, how we look? Can my bones perceive the world? Maybe my bones just really feel what you're sitting on. The bones listening to the sounds, right? The bones and to something that is neutral, that is pleasant. Even if that feeling of that, oh, something bad could happen is there. Can you notice that? But like, yeah, there's a little bit of this space around it. And maybe this bone could just listen to what might feel a little more neutral. Lab six, perfect for this, the layers lesson, the joints lesson. You know, what does it feel like a nice feeling in your bones? And then as you feel like and you have, okay, so what is this hypervigilant? What does it feel like sensationally and what might it want to do? What might it look like? What might it sound like? If you haven't already, you can explore with sound. Making sound. What is the sound that would want to come out? You can work with sound on purpose by making sound, doing the vu-ah sound, letting it like really vibrate from the bones. That's coming up, guys, if you're not familiar with what I'm referring to. Working with the sounds that Seth brings up, and I think that's in the extra, I just thought of it now, the extra resources of Lab 5, I think. And he goes into different sounds you can work with. The moving out may be procedural memories and whatnot that has to do with the abuse. So just really titrating that. It might be stuff, right, that you don't remember. So it might be like more of those younger movements. And really just taking your time to be with that. Something outside of you that might be supportive could be like a hot water bottle or sitting on something, like especially with the pelvis and the pelvic bones and the pelvic area, sitting on a ball, sitting, it could be different, you know, like a yoga ball or something like that. But there's even smaller ones too that you can sit on that can give you that sense of the structure, but the tissue, and just kind of titrating that. You can do a little bit of the potent posture work. And as you feel ready, you know, it as that can evolve into, you know, working with more of that aggression that might be there that has to do with the abuse. But again, not to force that. Right, just to keep building the capacity here. And it might be really useful to do, you know, if you haven't already worked with a practitioner, whether that's an SE practitioner or just a good in-person Feldenkrais session, if that's possible. That might be really helpful as well. All right, next question. I'm gonna keep it rolling. I want to try to get through all these, you guys. Second round alumni with EDT, abused by my father, 3 years old. I can't be myself with a man in my environment, at work, during an internship, even in the street. I'm either seducing him, totally involuntary, or I don't look at him at all. But I always know where he is. It invades my life, and I found myself in delicate situations, especially at work. I'm always this little girl magnetized by his male gaze, which is always sexualized for me. How can I work with this? So this sounds like a version of fawning, which can be like that behavioral aspect of freeze in order to stay safe. So it's like, I'm gonna, keep the gaze with you, maybe be seductive to stay safe, or I'm just gonna that hypervigilance, more of that, sympathetic of I'm gonna notice where you are to stay safe. So keep building regulation, keep doing the work, and connect with being what yourself feels like. What does being like yourself feel like? So not when men are around. Then you could start to explore with, well, if I imagine a man is around, and then what happens in your system when you imagine it, and then work with that. There might be a sensation, there might be an emotion, there might be a memory, and then work with it as you've been learning, as you've been talking about it. Go into that a little bit, and then settle as you feel like you have the capacity to do that. Another step could be, well, then when I see a man like in a movie, on a screen, or a picture, is there any man, is there any male figure that exists, whether you know them or don't personally, that you feel less of like that with, that you might respect in some way or feel comforted by? It could be somebody that's even passed away. I don't know. It could be a saint. It could be Martin Luther King. It could be, I don't know. It's just, does it just elicit that? If not, don't need to go there. But that could be a way of starting to work with how to be with them and feel okay, but also working with what's coming up that has to do with EDT. That has to do with the abuse and eventually working with that to mobilize some of that, to mobilize that survival energy. And that might be getting, if you haven't already, starting to get into the healthy aggression work with that as you feel ready to do. If you notice you're doing it, it's like that's how we start. Can I notice him doing it? Can I do it a little less? Can you resource and orient when you're in the, because obviously you need to go into the world and there, and work, like you said, and there's going to be men. Can I just start to do that and see what you notice and see if there's even a little bit of a shift that might even just be, I can be with this pattern. And again, I'm not just trying to make it go away, but I'm aware of it, and that starts the process of changing it. Okay, next question. I've suffered from what's been labeled as Raynaud's disease for many years, which is like a vasoconstriction. Usually it's in the hands, and there's a lack of blood flow that happens oftentimes when someone's exposed to cold. And you can even see sometimes the skin will look really white because there isn't blood. Sometimes it can be painful. So doing this work, I've felt parts of my arm starting to unthaw, and my feeling is that it's linked to parts of my system which are in freeze. I was curious if this is something you've come across with your sessions with people or courses, and the best approach practices, what they would be to support this, as it's just not something I've seen be very well understood, or anyone that's actually successfully healed from it. Keep doing the work. I'm assuming that you're alum, but maybe not. Lab six, which is coming up, great lessons. The layers lessons will be great. The kidney adrenal work is another suggestion as you're asking about practices. And explore with orienting with your hands, touching things. What feels good? What different temperatures feel okay? and start to track when do you notice the symptom. So this can be what gets categorized as like a syndromal pattern. Anything that gets labeled in the world as autoimmune-y is like a syndromal pattern. And there could be kind of a collection of different symptoms, but it basically is just a, it's dysregulation in the nervous system, but that there's just really a disconnect. There isn't much reciprocity, a reciprocal relationship between the sympathetic and parasympathetic. And that can show up then as this constriction in the hands. So, what happens before it happens? If you can start to notice, if there's something that happens, if there's a way that your physiology feels, if there's a trigger before the actual symptom, what's the before, the before, the before? For example, sometimes folks that experience migraines, before the migraine sets in, they might not start to notice that they're sensitive to light, or there might be a little dizziness feeling. So, if you can start to track what's happening, the Peter Levine talks about as prodromal, like the pre-prodromal, like what's happening before. Not to be, worried about tracking it, but just to explore with that, because then you could kind of work with what's going on in your system and start to maybe interrupt that constriction from happening. Like, do you feel there's some sympathetic energy you need to move? Do you feel you're going to freeze? Because this is a freeze thing, what's happening. So what's happening before, as well as just this shifting out of freeze? Because again, this reciprocal relationship, it's like you go up in the sympathetic, and then instead of the ventral vagal, or low turn dorsal coming on and discharging some of that energy or whatever, it's just, oh, nope, high tone dorsal. Right, just go up and then high tone dorsal. So we're just about getting more access to those other states. Maybe making some new associations to cold, like different, like I think I did say, like different temperatures, and just seeing what happens with that a little bit. So really supporting your hands. And we've seen lots of these types of things change. I haven't had a specific client with this, but I definitely believe it can change. Don't think that like this is just it. Okay, next one. I've suffered. Nope. We have one more. We're just gonna go over just by a couple of minutes. This one I have to pull up on my computer. Okay. Estranged and no conflict with abusive mom. She was at a family funeral, so my body responded with temporary blindness and running away. The blindness was a new and terrifying symptom that resolved immediately upon escape. How do I make family understand that I just cannot be around my mother so that I get their support? Should she show up at a future family event? Why did I go blind? Okay, so first off, you can just be really honest with your family. Let them know, hey, here's what's up. I need to not be around my mom right now. So if you can let me know if she's going to be at events, and then you can decide if you're going to go and see how they respond to that. If they're not willing to do that, then you need to decide, if you're going to go or not. If there is a way for you to find out. I'm assuming you don't have communication with your mom. But if you did, then that would also be just setting that boundary with her that you're not going to be around her right now. I know that's easier said than done, but that's just a practical application. And again, playing all of this work, but exploring with potent posture can be a real somatic way of finding that agency within yourself to create that request. And that boundary, you could let your family members know what you're working with a little bit here. You don't have to over explain, but just say what's happening for you. Why did you go blind? I can't say 100% of why, but it's common that things like that can occur with stress trauma, it's a freeze response, it's almost like sort of, getting narrow focused, like you're seeing a tunnel, but this sounds like it was more extreme that you actually could not see. I'm really glad to hear that that didn't sustain. Sometimes people will lose hearing for a certain amount of times. It's just part of the shutdown. So my sense is there was quite a bit of activation, and then there was some shutdown that specifically resulted in vision. And it might be really supportive to work really gently with orienting and orienting to safety, orienting to resources. And the extra resources, the brainstem, watering the brainstem that Seth does might be really nice. The gentle rolling of the head. I'm forgetting what lab that's in. Did we already do it? I don't know. But if you're alum, did you say you're alum? No, but anyway, there's a gentle rolling of the head. It might even be an orienting one, just right? Yeah, lab one. Just to bring some connection and some extra care to the eyes. And eventually working with the aggression, the sympathetic survival energy around the abuse with your mom, if you haven't already. Not that you have to eventually be around her, but regardless of whether you're going to be around her or not, it'll be useful to renegotiate that in your system. And so that's just happening overall, doing the work. But again, more specifically, as you start to mobilize that aggression. And any kind of there's any sort of annihilation energy that's there from what happened. All right, I think I got through them all. I did get through them all, not I think. I got through them all. And thank you guys for being here and dealing with my cough, my little throaty cough thing. And keep doing the work. This is what you've heard it before. This is revolutionary. It's great stuff. And all the Q&As, I mean, I listen to them. Keep listening to them. Even the old ones. They're super powerful. All right. Take care, everybody. Bye.